Today I'm at the William & Mary Film Festival, and I'm joined by Jamie Northrup, a Hollywood cinematographer and stuntman who has worked on shows like Daredevil, Limitless, and Public Morals. Please welcome Jamie to the show.
Hi, everyone.
So my first question was, like, how did you discover your love for performing stunts? Because that's such, like, a niche industry. It's not, like,
a normal thing. It's not. I mean, I tried to intentionally pick niches. I don't know why. I think I originally got into it because, well, I did gymnastics when I was a kid. So for 12 years, I did gymnastics. And then my friends and I would just make movies with, like, VHS tape recorders that we had, and the scripts were pretty much improvised the whole time. Nobody wrote anything down, and then I would just say, well, what about it? How about at this part you guys, like, beat me up? And and it just made sense because I was small. People could, like, pick me up and throw me, and that worked out, like, really great for like visuals, because you could do really funny things. And so we ended up just using that a lot, the idea that, oh, I'm acrobatic and I can jump off of something and land. I would be like the stunt double for people who were 6 feet tall and I'm only 5 foot five. And it was very, like, a funny joke. And so I just did that. And then I went to college, didn't really make too many movies in college, made a couple, and then graduated and went, I think that might actually be a job. I think you might actually be able to be a stunt person. I Googled it. There was one website at the time that said, this is how you do it. And I had none of the resources. He was like, well, you show up to the set. There were no sets for me to show up with. So in theory, the first time I tried to get into stunts was 2004 and on the Departed. And I just walked up to one of the guys that was a stunt guy who's, like, basically the first stunt person I've ever seen. And I said, hi, if you're not busy later, I'd really like to talk to you and ask you a couple questions. I really want to get into stunts. I don't know what to do. And he goes, okay. And I never talked to him again.
So, mentioning, like, websites and ways to recruit stunt people, you run a app called Stunt Listing.
Yeah.
Could you tell me more about that app?
Yeah, I started that because stunts is really hard to get into. I mean, it took me from 2004 to 2012 to become a union stunt person. So I did training. I tried to network. It just became complicated. And I was like, maybe there's a better way. There were websites that existed before, but you would end up just, like, paying a bunch of money and hoping that someone would cast you. And it felt like it didn't feel like a fair way to get into it. Like, the career ladder for stunts was had, like, a huge gap, and the gap required either you knew somebody, you were in a family, or you paid your way in. And I didn't have any of that, so I wasn't able to do it. So at some point, once I got in, I went, you know what, I could just build a website and allow people to sign up for free if they want to get into stunts, and if they're really trying to do it, we're happy to have you. And so now we've grown from, in the past 4 years, to being the biggest stunt directory in the world. We're used on tons and tons of movies and TV shows, and we have people signing up all the time. People who are brand new, and then people who have worked for 30, 40 years in stunts. So it's a fun little like side project.
Interesting. So you've worked yourself on tons of different shows and films. What would you say is your favorite project that you've worked on?
Man, it's so interesting. It's hard to, like, pinpoint. I think what's great about film in general is that I've really liked a lot of projects I've worked on, and it's hard to pick a favorite for just, like, an overall general reason. there's projects. I worked on this TV show called Boardwalk Empire that was on HBO, and it was basically the first union thing I worked on, and I really liked it because it was really challenging, really high stakes, and I was able to do what I was told, and it ended up meaning that my career started. So for me, it's like, if I had to pick like a real favorite, it probably would be that, but that was only my favorite just because I ended up with like a really good story and a good experience, and I met people there that I've known now for almost 10 years and have gotten to work with a lot. But I mean, from there, like I think almost every project can be really great for a reason. So it's hard for me to pinpoint one. I think they all have individual challenges that make them really great. What I'm sort of summarizing and like dancing around is that like that's more how I like think about it. It'd almost be like asking like someone who works as a designer, like a graphic designer, like what their favorite color is. And they would tell you like, no, like I really like a lot of different colors for a lot of different reasons. I like this red and this other color together, but there's like a purpose behind each of them.
But you're not going to pick like one.
I'm not. I could definitely pick one. I think one of my favorite stories was actually right after Boardwalk Empire. I worked on this Darren Aronofsky movie called Noah, and Noah is about Noah's Ark. It's like a retelling of that story. I can't tell you how historically accurate it was, but it was. There's one part of that show where they needed people lying on the steps of the ark, and then there was water that was going to pour down and like wash these people into the ocean. So the idea was that Noah had already put all the animals on the ark, and these people had attempted to storm the ark to get on themselves, because they, you know, when it starts raining for a couple days and it starts flooding and there's a boat there, or at least an ark, you might want to get on that thing. So no, in the story, Noah had to fight these people off, and we were people that he had fought and trapped behind, you know, locked out of the ark. And so for that, it was a lot of stunt people. It was probably around 20 people lying dead on the stairs. And then they poured 1,000 gallons of water onto us and had us wash down the stairs. And the stairs we're all scattered along different parts of the stairs, but the stairs are, you know, 40 feet tall. So it's a lot of rolling down stairs, but also you're a dead body, so you're not supposed to protect yourself, but also you're actually a living human being, so you actually have to protect yourself a little bit. And I really liked that because it was something that felt dangerous, but we were able to pull it off. People got a couple bruises, but that goes with the territory. I'd say, yeah, if you make me pick a favorite, that's one of my favorites.
I know I attended your stunt workshop the other day.
Yeah.
Where you rolled downstairs. So that was very interesting.
Yeah.
You basically like kept your arms out to like balance yourself as you.
Yeah, I was able to control it.
So yeah. Would you do that even if you were a dead body rolling downstairs? Or are you not able to even like?
I shouldn't do that. Yeah, you should try to play more dead, like more everything's sort of limp, and it probably would have been pretty similar, sort of fall. But the water, when the water hit you, it picked you up, so you didn't actually have control, and you actually couldn't see anything, because it was also pretty dark, and so you've got water in your eyes, and you're just sort of flailing around, and then eventually you land somewhere. And you go, oh, I'm at the bottom. I need to move out of the way because there's guys coming down from above me. So you sort of hit that, and then you go, all right, wake up, get out of the way, and you do that as quickly as you possibly can. And hopefully everybody did that in front of you too, or there's a big pile.
I was looking at your stunt page, and I was actually reading it aloud in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I saw was comfortable falling from 50 feet.
Yeah.
And I thought that's insane.
Yeah.
You've done a 50-foot fall.
I've done a couple. Yeah. Yeah. We rented a scissor lift, because there's no way. How do you find something 50 feet to jump off?
Right.
You know,
Besides a building.
Just but
crazy.
Yeah. So we ended up renting a scissor lift that went up to 54 feet. And then I would do, there's four basic high falls you can do. You can sort of do like a three-quarter flip to your back. You can just fall face first and then turn to your back. You can sort of jump out with your feet out from under you, land on your back, and then you can just like lean backwards and you just fall straight on your back. And that's, I tried to do all those from above 50 feet and just relax, not overthink it. Do some warm-ups at a lower height, but yeah, I don't know. You get used to it.
Just kind of wing it. You just kind of.
You kind of wing it, but you're trying to be smart about it.
Right.
Like as you start fall, like you have a plan. There's a famous line that you don't learn a high fall on the way down. Because if you did, you'd kind of splat. Wouldn't go real great. But we're able to, you know, with enough practice, you're able to figure out how far you should lean, where you should be focusing your eyes and your, you know, how much of that flip you should be initiating.
Okay. So has there ever been a scene where a director has asked you to do it and you've been like, no, there's no way that's safe. I'm not going to do that. And how do you deal with like something like that?
Usually, yeah. I mean, I got one in my mind. Hopefully I'll think of some more. I think that comes up a lot more than you think.
Oh, really?
Basically just because a director might ask for something but not really know what they want. So they're asking for something. And you're like, yeah, I mean, you're making it dangerous, but you're not making it good. Like, in your eyes, that sounds like it's going to be better. We did a car crash in September 2019 that was a 40-mile-per-hour car crash. And we tested this for about a week, and we ended up crashing it. We were going to crash it into a tree. And I wasn't the person in charge of saying yes or no. But that ended up being a stunt that felt really, really at a high, like really high speed. Because sometimes in film, normally you don't really need to be going that fast if you're crashing. You could be 15 and 30 are probably going to look the same often.
I did notice that, especially with the punch that we did yesterday. Or was it yesterday?
Yeah.
Yesterday. You could move so slow, but on the camera, it looked so fast compared to, like, when we did those punches, people were moving like this, like super slow. But when you would look back at the shot, it would look like they were like putting tons of force into the punch.
Yeah, just made them look like they had a heavy fist or something, right?
And
it's all about that reaction and how heavy you make it look. Right. I could also just turn my head to the side a little bit if someone hit me and it like it didn't affect me at all and keep talking. Right. There's a lot you can do with that small stuff. But yeah, I mean, they used to say like they had to tell Bruce Lee to like slow down and Jackie Chan like slow down because they move so fast that you can't see it.
That's one thing I also wanted to talk to you about. I have two black belts. You did martial arts for a while. I saw that.
Yeah, I have no black belts though. What are your black belts in?
I have a black belt in karate and a black belt in taekwondo.
Okay. What kind of karate do you know?
So I believe, I'm not sure. I know it was mixed with some jujitsu.
Okay.
So I know it was like a mixture.
Sort of the sensei had his own slant on things and wanted to sort of create his own style. Yeah. Okay.
But it was really cool. And then when I moved here, I started doing taekwondo. And that was very bad for me. Not in the way of like bad, like a bad thing to do.
Sure.
But it was not, it didn't come as naturally for me as karate did. Especially because like taekwondo is so focused on balance and on kicks and stretching. And I'm not very good at stretching. at all. Like,
all right.
I just collapse. I can't do the, you know, where people do the butterfly and they like put their head to the floor.
Yeah, I still can't do that.
There's no way I can do that.
No, I've never done that.
So taekwondo is like very focused on that.
Yeah.
Which makes it like much harder.
It helps. You want to be able to do that kick straight into the lights over your head and in case they're attacking you. I'm not sure what the reason is, but it does look cool. There's some cool moves you can do. Yeah. Taekwondo is very focused on that. Yeah, my background, I did gymnastics for 12 years, and then I continued to do it even a little bit today. And no martial arts training until I was in my mid to late 20s. And then I started with Shotokan karate, which is sort of like a philosophy of like, you are a brick wall,
right.
But I am like a 5'5" brick wall. So that's not like an insurmountable thing.
Right.
So it was good. It was very good. It was the best. That was the best teacher I've had for any martial art. And he would train me almost personally throughout the summer while I was there, because his school his students went away for the summer. And it was very good. That was a great foundation, teaching just like grounding your feet and doing punches. And I was doing it with the philosophy in mind that I might get into stunts. And if I get into stunts, sometimes people do martial arts and stunts, and you need to have that ability to at least look like you have the intent to hit.
Right.
From there, I've kind of bounced around. I did Wing Chun for I think 9 months, and that's I really just getting the basics on that. I did Judo for 6 months.
Judo's fun.
Judo's pretty fun. It can be really challenging because it's so specific. And if you never go to the jiu-jitsu side, then it ends up being just a lot of the same thing over and over again. And now I'm training a little bit of Muay Thai, but I've kind of touched every different martial art as much as I can, even just for a couple days. But
I find jiu-jitsu and those kinds of sports, even though I've done like a little bit of them, especially when I was doing karate, when they would put them together, very suffocating.
You mean like literally suffocating?
not like literally suffocating, but like very close quarters type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When you're grappling.
Yeah.
And that to me can feel very uncomfortable.
Okay.
Like it can become suffocating, mm-hmm. like physically.
Like you don't want to get out of it. You're just like, I need to get out of here.
Right.
I'm not in a space.
And then they don't want you to hit or anything, so you've got to grapple your way out. So it's very technique oriented.
It is, yeah. I mean, they narrowly focus those things so that you don't just like hit your way out of every problem when you could really easily just sort of twist a wrist or like manipulate or lean over, right? Because I mean, they all have different philosophies behind what their purpose is. And jiu-jitsu is super popular now and wasn't really before.
Right.
Anything what it is.
I have like a couple friends who do jiu-jitsu, have never done any other martial art, which I don't know if that's the best thing to do. I feel like karate is a great starting point.
Yeah, they're all, like,
but
it's just different routes, right? Yeah.
You're a master in everything.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're a master at one thing, you're going to be awesome. If you don't have any other knowledge of anything else, then you're definitely going to run into trouble.
Yeah. That was weird. I thought I heard an echo.
Maybe it was this.
Yep.
There's lots of things to make sounds.
Yeah, I
noticed
that. In
the sound booth.
I was very mad at myself.
Chair.
And then I knew, that's like the worst sound ever.
I don't know if you saw me when I came in, but I was trying to lock everything off.
Oh, that
I was like, how do I lock
this
everything?
This is my first time ever doing a in-person like interview.
Oh,
I
wow.
I usually do them over the phone.
It's very natural.
So I'm like, I was like very scared, and then I noticed I've got two tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking, I can cut that all out.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I'm pretty much.
This
fine.
Is gonna be the best podcast ever, I'm sure.
Of course. I've got like four more today, so I think I'm eating lunch in here. Honestly, it's gonna be really fun.
Do you need anyone else? I talked to people last night, and they were like, "Wait, what's happening?" I
was
like,
I'm a little bit afraid that I might be full.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a bad thing because there's so many people here that I would like to interview. But I guess I could get their contact info and stuff. I'm trying to make it over to the networking event between two podcasts.
Okay.
To try to get like as much contact info as I can for like maybe next time they come down here.
Yeah, I mean, you can always do phone interviews and you can always... it's not like you have to release these right away.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to release them like all together because like, especially since this podcast is like artists... If you release all filmmakers in a row, it's like, what are you doing? Like, all the people who want to hear from painters. I think I have a mural mm-hmm. artist that I'm hoping to do.
Oh, that's really
soon.
Cool.
But, yeah, I have, a ton of photographers and filmmakers, which is kind of a problem and a great thing, too.
They're pretty diverse. I mean, you'd be surprised, right? 'Cause
right.
I spend a lot of my time making apps, And a lot of the app side of it is this very like narrowly focused. My favorite part of it is what's called like the UX, is the user experience of an app. Like, and you referenced it. You said, I love this app Anchor. I open it up and it tells me this right away.
Right.
And then I click here and it tells me all the other, anything else I'd need
to
do.
Perfect.
It's a perfectly well-made app. That the difference between a well-made app that you're describing and a badly made app is the user experience. The user experience should be, when I open it, I don't have to run around trying to find things and think buttons are hard to push and they're not in the right spot. They're not where you feel like they should be, right? It's like a very feeling based thing. And to me, that's like there's a little bit of an art to it. And I work with a designer to develop our next version of the app that's going to be, I mean, even better. And the goal is to not change it so that people have to relearn it, but change it so that when they see it, it's immediately, oh, there's nothing different. I understand this, right? They're going to feel that, but that it's going to be a better experience in the end.
I'm definitely going to use your app for sure.
For finding sun people.
Right. Cause I love action films, but I think when I try to use my friends as like stunt people, it becomes like this comedy.
Like, yep.
You don't focus on like how you're supposed to fall. They just fall and it looks like they're like intentionally falling.
Yeah. No, I tried to train someone just to take a punch.
Right.
An actor, and we were working for half an hour and I was like, it just looks like you're just like a
stick.
Stack of wood, like just timbering over. Mm-hmm. Where like there's no story that, like the storytelling in stunts it happens very quickly. I don't think you were at the one last year, but the one, so I changed it this year. The thing I took out was that a punch, there's a lot going on in a punch. Basically a stunt performer is someone who acts very quickly on like a micro scale, right? So if I'm throwing a punch, I need to tell the story that is the beginning of the punch where my arm comes up. You actually need to see it. But if it was real martial art, I would do my best to avoid you seeing that. But the audience, who is not picking up on any subtle cues in my body language, needs to see this big punch coming in. They need to see contact happen. And they also actually have to see my like follow through. Because if they don't see the follow through of the punch, it looks like my punch just stopped on their face and then disappeared. Even though they might not even see it if you cut away at just the wrong time. It looks really awkward. And so you have to tell that whole story. So as a performer on both sides, you have to tell maybe the guy getting punched, does he recognize that the punch is coming? Does he not recognize? And all that happens in a half a second at most. So you have to do three or four things in half a second in the right order with like the right performance style.
Right.
So that's something I really like, because I'm not very good at like long-winded performances. I feel like I can get it down pretty quickly,
right?
And that's something I really like about stunts.
That was something I definitely noticed. I walked out of your workshop and I was telling all these people, I was like, in real martial arts, you're punching like this, you're not gonna hook around this broadly, because it's like that person is gonna see it and go straight to your weak spot,
right?
But I noticed that made a huge difference. Like, I started by punching like you would in a martial art, and then I noticed, oh, he wants me to like actually like hook it around.
Yeah, because all that matters is the camera, and all that matters is that the audience understands. So, I mean, audiences are more attuned to that. So obviously not every single punch is going to end up like that, but not every camera angle is the same way too. I mean, we can film it in a way that the big trick of the seminar was, you know, you're gonna punch and miss me, and we're going to make it look like you hit me. But for, you know, if you were throwing a punch that went straight in, you might actually have to make contact depending on the camera angle. So you might have to tap me really light wherever you're hitting me. And people who are good at, who like have black belts, who've done a lot of punching and have trained to just tap the mat. You're just tapping it, but you're also doing that with intent, and you have to, you know, snap back. There's different ways to make it look good, and you know, they can't all they can't all be as simple as a big roundhouse, a big like swinging hook punch.
Mm-hmm. But you find that's like the easiest way to teach people.
That's definitely the easiest way to teach it. Is you just need to make that happen, and it's the most applicable thing. I mean, a lot of movies have punches in them.
So you were on SNL mm-hmm. with Natalie Portman. Was it multiple times?
It was just one day.
Okay, one day.
Yeah.
What was that like with Natalie Portman? Like, that's like such a household name, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, she was great. It's impressive because she has to do so much so quickly.
Right.
So as a performer, it's very impressive to see a total professional working who's good, who's clearly like, you know, they don't get a lot of rest that week. They're very rushed. I mean, they have her on a very tight schedule. So my interactions with her are pretty quick. You know, I needed to make sure there was maybe some like broken glass around at one point. So I need to make sure that anywhere she's walking, she's not going to end up stepping or slipping on anything like that. She was like hitting a printer with a baseball bat. That's like part of the song.
Such a pop thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's all, yeah, but it's fun. It's all like visual fun stuff, and they're trying to parody common stuff. So, yeah, I mean, she's just professional, and so my job is to get in there and not make it. It's not about me. It's not even really about her. It's about like getting the video done. And so it's just like, hi, nice to meet you. How are you? I'm Jamie. You're going to throw me through this window. And she's like, okay, what should I? And you're like, oh, you'll just put your hands on me and then just let go and let me go flying. And she's like, okay, great. Okay, great. I mean, I've done that same basic, those same basic setups with her and with The Rock on a different day. And you see they're just regular people, absolutely right. Just regular people. And they just need to know what they're supposed to do. And they're just very good at doing that thing. when someone says, we want to do this, they will do that, and they will add their own flair to it, and that's what makes them incredible to watch.
What was The Rock like? Because I know...
Jeez, he was so nice.
This shouldn't be,
unbelievable.
Like, rude to Natalie Portman, but The Rock is a much more menacing-looking guy. Not facially, but, like, he's a very big guy.
He's
and he
huge.
Looks like a guy that could throw you through a window.
And that was, I mean, that was sort of the idea, right? Yeah, she doesn't look like she couldn't like grab me and just throw me, but
right.
You know, in the movie, in that show, she could. The Rock is by far the nicest person I've met. Him and maybe Mark Ruffalo, they're both like incredibly great to work with. I worked with The Rock for probably 5 minutes, and he must have said my name 10 times.
Huh.
As like a genuine, like, I'm going to learn your name and remember you,
right.
Sort of like mental trick. And I was like, whew. Like people like it when you're like, oh, hey, oh, Jamie, right? Jamie. Like, okay. So Jamie, here's what we're going to do here. And I was like, I didn't even know we're on speaking terms. Like he's like, we're going to go over to this corner and then I'm going to throw you into this corner and then we'll put you on the table. And you know, I didn't really think about it until we got right into it. I was like, oh, this guy was a professional wrestler for a long time. He knows everything.
Right.
I really was just thinking of him as a movie star.
He's not like, hey, stunt man, you're over here. Like that guy on The Story that was like, this man is so cool.
Yeah.
And you were like, I've worked with you like 3 times. Like,
oh, yeah.
How do you not know who I am?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, to some people, you might as well be a prop. But he was, you know, he basically started in the same sort of career and then just worked his way up, and he's got incredible charisma, and you know, he's just done everything right. So it was great to work with him because he knew how to do everything before I even was thinking about it, and he was just doing it naturally. I mean, his thing was, he's working on a TV show and he is not going to get hurt, is not allowed to get hurt, right? Because he's working on 100 different movies, and he needs to make it look great and funny. And so he was able to just, you know, walk me through everything and make it look like he did his side of it and I did my side of it. And yeah, I don't know. He was very nice. And then at the very end, they're rushing him off and he's like, wait, wait, wait. I need to say goodbye to Jamie. And I'm like, listen,
you've been nice.
You are going above and beyond. I fully understand. I thank you. That is... That's, I mean, that's like the story I tell about him every time. And I don't think he does it for that reason. I think he just is really thoughtful and concerned with, you know, other people.
That's what I've heard from a lot of people, but not from someone I met in person. So it's good mm-hmm. to know, like, he's actually like that. It's not just a, like, persona.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important to remember with a lot of celebrities that they're under a ton of stress and a ton of pressure, and you're catching people at weird moments, and people might be asking them just awkward questions all the time. Like, oh, so you're The Rock. And it's like, well, what does that mean? What are you trying to say? Like, and them being able to handle that graciously is just incredibly impressive to me. And anyone who doesn't, I just go, well, that's probably how I would act.
Right.
I would be pretty quiet and stick to myself. And, you know, if someone doesn't want to be my best friend on set just because I showed up and I'm their stunt person,
it's
like,
okay.
That's totally great. I have no problem with that. I'm actually not here for them. I'm here for myself doing my own little job because I like my job. And I'm glad I can help someone out while doing it.
So with every person on the show, we do like a 60-second rapid-fire questionnaire.
These are familiar questions
that are like quick yeah. and like this or that kind of questions.
The lightning round.
Yeah, basically. You know where I took that from, don't you?
A lot of podcasts do. I don't know
who
does it. Yeah.
It started on the. Do you know who Polar Pro is?
No.
They basically make like super high-end indie filters where they take quartz from like Arizona and they like melt it down. These indie filters are like, so expensive.
And you believe this?
No, they're like the startup company that like is
okay.
in Arizona, and they like actually melt down this quartz.
All right.
And like form it into an indie filter. But anyway, so they have a podcast called Golden Hour Podcast, which was what I wanted the original name of this podcast to be called.
They stole it.
And then they took it. So, and they had something called the Lightning Round. So I was like, you know what, guys? You keep stealing my ideas. I'm gonna keep my ideas going. And we can both have very similar types of podcasts. But anyway, so the idea is that they lead to like a more accurate answer that is like quickly made inside your head.
Yeah.
So you don't have to like think about it.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what I say.
Good luck.
I can always run over the computer and push delete.
Just delete the entire file.
That's it. Sorry, man. I didn't say that stuff. All right, let's give it a try.
Okay, so there are five questions.
All right, I can do it.
Here, I'll start a timer. You've got to make it under 30 seconds, actually. I'm going to do 30 seconds because I've been doing 60 and everybody makes it in like 27.
All right, so I'll try to beat that.
Okay, here. Okay. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
It's going. Okay. Fire or fall?
Fire or fall?
Yep.
What?
Which one would you rather do, a fall or fire?
Oh, fire.
Okay. Car hit or fight scene?
Car hit.
Canon or Sony?
Canon.
Morning or evening?
Morning.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Vanilla. I did that in like under 25.
Yeah.
And I asked questions of my own.
This is what like... This is what gets me every time. I think it's going to like go like so well. I'm going to be like, you went way over and like be able to like troll you for it. But like then the timer like...
Why don't you like, just have like 50 questions lined
50
up?
Questions.
Yeah.
Just be like,
they don't have to relate to what's happening.
But. Yours was probably the hardest to write ones that relate to it.
Yeah.
In like short, because I try to keep the questions kind of short so that you don't like blame it on me and be like, you asked a super long question. So like fire or fall.
Yeah.
But that's like,
what's your perfect
so
date?
Short.
What?
It's like, what? But yeah. Are we allowed to talk about some of the clips that you showed us yesterday? Which ones are we allowed to talk about?
Yeah, we can talk about most of the car. We can talk about the car hit because they don't. That's not like the point of the story.
Can we talk about the explosion?
Yeah, the explosion's fine. That's aired
cool.
like a year ago. Yeah.
So that one just seems very interesting to me,
mm-hmm.
Because you have an external factor that for everyone listening, basically. Or do you want to explain it?
Yeah. So we're in the White House. There's a bunch of reporters. I don't know who. I think it was on the show Madam Secretary. So it's probably Taya Leone's stunt double and some assistant. And there is some kind of explosion that happens just outside of the White House. Maybe, I think we're in the Oval Office. So, right, there's a bunch of press photographers. There's an explosion happens. We all fall down. That's the stunt part of it. I read the script, but for all our purposes here, that's all that happened. Right. Yeah.
So the thing that makes me so interested in that scene specifically is you said you don't know when that explosion is going to hit you.
Not exactly, no.
Because that explosion comes very close to you or hits you.
Yeah, right? It's not like there's any, if I was standing right in the middle of that explosion, so yeah, there's like a glass breaks and some clouds of smoke puff through. None of that's dangerous. Even if it hit me from, you know, 1 or 2 feet away, it might kind of sting a little bit, but that's the worst it would be. I mean, they make stuff like that as safe as they possibly can. And there's glass in there, but the glass is rubber glass. I mean, you could chew on it if you had to. It would be no problem.
I can't believe my alarm just went off.
So
that
typical.
That really sucks. That's like the only time that's ever happened to me, which is like really funny. But
you've never heard that on I've heard that on professional podcasts.
You have?
Yeah.
Do you listen to Joe Rogan?
A little bit.
I find him very interesting sometimes and very boring others. Like,
well,
he's really interesting when he's talking. Like.
Two alarms.
I know, right?
And this thing going
down. Really got to turn Do Not Disturb on.
Oh, that's a good idea.
He's really interesting when he's interviewing people like Neil deGrasse Tyson and like people like that are like doing like super niche things that are like super interesting, like space and like things like that. But I do not find it interesting when he does the Joe Rogan Experience MMA show. When he interviews all these MMA people, it's like the same interview every time for me.
Yeah, some people, I mean, it's just a thing that you aren't interested in as much.
Like, you either like it or you hate it, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think some people really, really love that stuff.
Right.
I mean, they just fanboy out about, like, oh, that's that guy. Or that guy has, like, a diet, like a special diet. I want to hear about his special diet.
I mean, if you have all the time in the world, I would be so happy to listen to that if I had all the time in the world. But when I want to listen to something like productive, then I listen to something like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's like talking about something like, if you freeze water over a lake, all the fish are still alive underneath, but water gets bigger as it freezes, and it's the only liquid that gets bigger as it freezes. And I just find that stuff so like fascinating, even though I don't want to really go into like particle physics or anything.
Right.
I just find it interesting.
Right. I mean, he's just trying to sell the like fun of that,
right,
of science, right, to a general public like Bill Nye would have done before him. So yeah, that's pretty funny. There's
all
a tour.
People, yeah.
There's a tour walking by.
They're all like, this kid's got a podcast in there.
Oh. I don't know. Can they see you from here?
You
could legitimately be a freshman, so.
I think it's like super tinted.
Okay.
So I think they still can, though. It's kind of cool. But tell me about the car hit that we looked at yesterday.
Yeah. So I did a car hit for the show called Search Party, and what had to happen is my character's running away from someone. A car comes in from the side as he's running and hits him, knocks him down. I think he gets up and runs away after that. That's the story. So my job was to do the part where he gets hit by the car and hits the ground, and his part was to take over from there. And it's a tricky thing. So we warmed that up by just walking it out, just going like making sure the driver of the car could see me, because on camera, the driver of the car, she's coming from a spot where you can't see. So, like, she can't really see me that well, and I can't see her that well. So I just have to, we do a couple rehearsals where I just walk, she drives up nice and slow, and we find a meeting point. Then we do that again, just at a slightly higher speed, and then she's going off. I think she was a gymnast, too, and I was a gymnast. So we have you take a very, like, visual cue, and you just make sure you're doing everything the same every single time. So I'm I have a starting mark that is exact, and I'm starting. I know I'm starting with my left foot so that my steps are exactly the same, so that when I put my left foot down and my right foot swings in front, that's when I'm getting hit by the car. So I get hit in the back of the legs, not the front of the legs. She's driving in, hitting me at the exact same speed. Ideally, she's waiting for me to hit up, to pass by a spot. Then she puts on the gas, and then she stops at another certain point.
So they're not slowing down as you come nearer to the car. They're following through like a real car would.
What she ended up doing was she's stopped maybe about 25 feet back, because that was actually a very small parking lot.
Oh, really?
And yeah, like that. What you could see to the left was about 15 feet, and then to the right was about 5 more feet. So you were seeing almost the entire width of it. So she's just off frame, parked. She accelerates from zero, hits me, and then as soon as I hit her windshield, I think she pretty much hits the brakes. And then I go flying off and land on the ground. So I'm wearing knee pads, elbow pads. I probably had a back pad on.
Right.
Just, I'm not even sure I did. I don't remember. But it's a good idea to have one if you're doing that. And then, yeah, I mean, the injuries I noticed from that were mostly, like, really minor. It's the stuff that really bugs me from stunts, is that you end up just,
like a little cut.
Scraping your hands on concrete, and you're like, ah. That's going to hurt for like a week.
Right.
But like the actual car hit, none of that hurt. Okay. The hitting the ground only hurt because I had my knee pads are not quite the right size. So they shifted a little bit when I landed. So I got a little tap on one side of my knee, and I went, all right, I gotta get the right size. I got to order the right size now.
That reminds me, did you know that California is like the safest place to get hit by a car?
Why is California the safest place to get hit by a car?
So they have these laws that make you, all car manufacturers, all cars going to California in any way, have to have safety metal on the whole front portion of the car that will, like, crumble as you hit it. So it'll dent in, so it won't hurt you, is the idea.
So basically the front of the car dents really easily.
Right.
Huh.
But then whoever's car it is gets, like, totaled if you hit a person.
I think maybe it won't get totaled. Because I didn't total that car, right? Like, I think I got hit by it was a BMW.
Shattered so the windshield.
The front of it was, yeah, the windshield, they got to replace the windshield. There's a few $100, maybe more on a BMW.
Right.
But what was nice about that car is that the front of the car was chosen to have, like, a nice, soft, rolling front rather than, you know, a big SUV that would hit me in the shoulders.
That is something I've noticed on all productions, I think. I don't think I've ever seen a car hit scene where someone's been hit by, like, a police giant, like, SWAT truck.
Yeah, I mean, they do some. My friend Marcus did one where he got hit by a van. And
that's crazy.
And he's 6'3", 200 something pounds. And it doesn't look good. Because the person just gets hit, they go flying in one direction, they fall down.
Right.
And
it's like kind of boring.
It's kind of boring versus like if you got hit with like a police car where they go up and over on top of the roof. And then the challenging part about that is that the lights are up there. So you actually have to like roll yourself over the lights so that, you know, a lot of times you want to go over the car and the car keeps going. Versus like what I did where I got hit by the car, it stopped, I went flying. But yeah, I mean, there's different ways to do all these things. And that little, like, we have that like attention to detail that people wouldn't think about, that like, well, we're choosing what car we're getting hit with.
Right.
So you choose wisely.
We're choosing what car we get hit with. That's just hilarious. And then what gives you like the drive to continue to perform stunts?
I don't know. There's just something really fun about it. I think that is a really good question, right? So I think it's hard sometimes to identify what you really want, because I'm a really analytical person. So when you're like, oh, what do you want? I'm like, well, I kind of have a lot of ideas in mind. Like, I mean, I could make an app. I could be a cameraman. I could work in stunts. And you know, where do those lead? Like, I try to picture that in a couple years, and I go, well, I will have done a couple projects. Some of them I'm really proud of. I'll be much better at it than I am now. And then where am I? And I go, well, so that stuff doesn't really get me going.
Right.
But what I've noticed that is that I really enjoy the work itself, and the less I focus on, you know, like where it takes me in a career, the better. So I just go, what would I want to do? I mean, like, I left that out of the beginning story, but the reason I chose to pursue stunt work is I was a grown up and I said, I don't know what I want to do. I could do a couple different things. I mean, I have a lot of time. I got a couple decades to figure this out, and choose a career and focus on it. And I went, well, what did I want to do when I was a kid? And I went, well, when I was really young, I think I was like maybe second grade, I used to run across the field at my elementary school, flip over onto my back and yell, I'm a stuntman. And I thought, well, I guess maybe there's something to that.
Right.
Because I still think that's kind of interesting. I mean, I did that exact stunt last week for the 24 speed, the exact
same thing.
Weird. And
I'm a stuntman.
It's right on the nose. And what I've noticed about people is that people tend to say what they want, but still might not know what they want.
I hope you don't mind if I use that as the title. I'm a stuntman.
That's
fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, cool. I'm a stuntman. So I got two last questions.
Yeah.
The last one's going to take a little while. We've got like 10 minutes left.
Okay.
So the first one is, what does your mother think of all the crazy stunts that you're doing?
I don't know. I don't know what my mom thinks about it. I mean, her and my wife are always like, oh, don't get hurt. Don't get hurt. And I'm like, listen, like most of the time, I'm not doing something that I'm going to get drastically hurt.
I'm just jumping off a 50-foot building.
I'm just jumping off a 50-foot building. I've done that before. I did that, you know, there's more dangers in my 12 years as a gymnast than there were in most of my stunt career. Right. But, you know, then again, there's a lot more pads. I'm not sure what she thinks about it. I think I've just proven that I make responsible decisions and I don't put myself in over my head. And that's just a good career mentality in general, no matter what you're doing. You don't step into something going, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this, and then continue with what you're doing. You just make sure you set yourself up for success. So, I think she tries not to think about it too much.
Right. Huh. It's not what my mom would do. My
mom would tell you.
My mom would call me every time I was going to do a stunt and be like, make sure you're careful, make sure you wear your pads, like all that.
Yeah. Well, I don't tell my mother every time I'm doing a stunt.
Because you know that would happen.
Yeah, something like that would happen. You just worry her. So, you know, and most of the time it's not as dangerous as it sounds like it's going to be.
Right. I think that's a big misconception among a lot of people, is that people think that stunt people are like insane.
Yeah, we're not daredevils.
But they're not really like doing as dangerous of things as people think they are.
Yeah, there's a woman who we were going to hire for the website to do some writing, and her theory going in, she's new to the stunt world, and her theory was that stunt people might have like some like traumatic events as a kid that makes them want to be involved in things that would physically hurt themselves. And I was like, that's an interesting idea. Like, I fully understand where that's coming from, but I think there's a difference between a stunt person and sort of like a YouTube daredevil, someone who like would light themselves on fire. Like, we trained and I like learned from people who've been lighting people on fire for decades how to do that. I don't feel the danger. There's no danger there. I'm not doing it. I'm doing it for the performance, for the show. I have my head is in a whole different space than, oh my God, this feels dangerous.
Right.
And if I was interested in hurting myself, there's a lot easier ways to do it. And also, the people around me, I could get them hurt if I was interested in actually hurting myself.
Right.
And they wouldn't have me back. They would be like, that guy is a little off. And I've met those people who are really interested in, you know, the pain side of things. And you go,
weird.
Yeah, we can't have that guy back because he's kind of a loose cannon.
Right. So I think we can end it here. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Alex.
And maybe we can do like a follow-up in like a year. Maybe you'll be like farther along. Like, you're already super far along because you've been on like, I didn't even mention you were on The Walking Dead too, right?
I'm on the like third Walking Dead series.
Okay.
And that'll be coming out soon. It's not out yet. It'll be sometime in maybe mid 2020.
Great. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll link to Jamie's info and Stunt Reel and everything, and the app Stunt Listing. He's wearing a hoodie for Stunt Listing, so it keeps reminding me. But yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
Yeah. Cool. Peace.
Cut. Yeah.